Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Andrew, we are going to talk about the Carabao Cup. We are going to talk about the Madrid Derby, which was obviously played in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Obviously. We are going to talk about Franz Beckenbauer. We're going to talk about a lot of things. But we are definitely going to make up for some things that we forgot to talk about. This sounds like it will be the start of the Leeds United podcast. So let's get into some Leeds United. First of all, can we listen to and enjoy one of the great goals we've seen so far this season? Lord Bamford, Sir Patrick Lord Bamford, with a worldly of a goal from the weekend that we did not discuss yet against Peterborough.
Ampadu, aiming for Bamford, took it down nicely, hit it well. Oh, that is sensational. Patrick Bamford with an absolute blockbuster of a goal. You will struggle to see a better strike than that in the FA Cup this season.
How good was that?
Incredible. Incredible goal. Have you seen, there's a one of the camera angles in particular, I think from behind the far goal, the
yes.
opposite goal that it scored from, it makes it look even more majestic. Because you also can kind of, from that view, see like after it goes in, the limbs behind the goal in which it just occurred. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and you can see the extent of the away support that Leeds brought with them. And it's great at the FA Cup games that they allow more seats for the away supporters. So when the away end pops off, it's something special. Absolutely stunning goal from Lord Bamford.
Yeah, that's an amazing goal to be able to do that. Also, his look is interesting. Like I haven't really, full disclosure, I mean, I just haven't really paid a ton of attention to Leeds, I guess, since they've gone down. So I haven't really seen Patrick Bamford, but he looks different now. Like he looks like you knew him and he was kind of this, like, I don't know, not nerdy, but you know how he looked.
Played the violin.
Like, it's like he went to summer camp and like got corrupted and now he's come back and he's like changed and he knows everything about like sex and curse words and like you know, when you go to camp when you're like in seventh grade.
Yeah. Yeah. He touched a girl for the first time. He looks like he spent a summer with Justin Bieber.
Yeah,
just hanging out.
Yeah, he's been like corrupted.
Brilliant goal! Just the chest control, the turn, everything. And the second Leeds related thing, and it's something I'm super excited about. It's our podcast, and I'm already promoting someone else's podcast. But
what's going on here?
Jesse Marsh is putting himself out there, Andrew. Jesse Marsh is going to appear on Masterclass, which is the Coach's Voice on X where he talks about a masterclass game. Now, for Jesse Marsh, that can only be one of two games. One game is most unlikely. It's the MLS Red Wedding, the 7-0. I doubt it's that game.
Interesting.
The win at Anfield is probably the one against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool from last season or the season before. Last season. So it's probably going to be that. So Jesse Marsh is joining Simon Jordan. And the tease is very, very interesting and very, very good. So let's have a listen just to what Jesse, some of the topics Jesse's going to talk about. One topic in particular I've chosen.
There's something in English culture about that sort of negative, edgy kind of cutting, like that's the truth.
And there's also a culture in this country, in England, of envy. They rather than admire
that's
people.
Sad.
I think it's sad. And I think it's...
And it's pathetic.
Now, I know that's edited, but the way he goes, and pathetic, is amazing to me.
Yeah, he had been holding that back.
Yeah.
Couldn't wait to unleash it.
Absolutely. Jesse Marsh. What did I say? The sunny Wisconsinite. Isn't he from Wisconsin?
I think so.
Oh, God. Not Wisconsin. Is this another? Jesus.
I'm pretty sure he is.
But I remember just thinking how his sonny always looking on the bright side of life, up American coaching would transfer in England. And he seems to be talking about that negative and that envious condition that's in England. And I can't wait to hear their conversation. I really
can't. Me too. Because I, without hearing the rest of the context of that, I already kind of agree with him. Like, I do think that honestly, from like listening to other podcasts with English hosts, like there is a
cynicism,
sarcasm, elitism, like there, and it's not across the board. I've listened to plenty that are silly and ridiculous and sophomoric, which is also hilarious to me. But I'll be curious to hear him expound on that, on like the experience that he lived.
When you think of some of the characters in English football, some of the, like, you know, your Neil Warnocks, your Harry Redknapps, even, you know, Dower. Who else would be a good example of this? You're kind of dour, like even back in the day, your Jim Smiths, just dour English, you know, cynical jokes, you know. Even Jack Charlton, who had a great personality, still very much kind of ensconced in negativity in many ways. Brian Clough, for being a great character, was still deeply, deeply negative and cynical. And I was thinking of a conversation I had the other day, and it's a friend of mine, Chris. He's from Ipswich. A great guy. Like, top, top fella. And he's playing on a team that I was involved with. And we were chatting there a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about an American coach he was dealing with, right? And he goes, you know, he'd ask us to do certain things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. The coach had, you know, before a game, you know that thing, hands in, 1, 2, 3, and you say the name of the team, like 1, 2, 3, Falcons. That. That was basically his response to that. Like, there is something about that up American sensibility that rubs English people the wrong way and gets them on the back foot straight away. And it's not like English people can't be happy or jovial, but it's quite jarring. I can't wait for the conversation on that, because I'm sat here, and Marsh is clearly putting himself out there, the coach's voice. Simon Jordan's podcast, he is getting back in the dating game. He's ready to be hurt again. He clearly wants to do that, because I know
this is what we just said about Graham Potter, right?
Yeah.
Once we start to see him go through the circulation of the shows, we'll know he's ready.
Jesse is putting on makeup again. He's wearing a push-up bra, or in the case of a male, he's putting gel in his hair again. He's getting a nice thick fade, and he's wearing a t-shirt that shows off his biceps, even though he doesn't have great biceps. He's getting out there again. He's going to the bars. He's going to the clubs. He needs a job. And I just want to hear if this podcast does any damage to his chances of getting one in England.
Could be doubling down on the media route, wanting to show people that, like, look, I'll say stuff. Like, make me your number one analyst. I won't hold back. I will say things.
Yeah.
I won't play nice. Like, you know, he could be going that. Could be going that way.
So I checked in with a Leeds supporting friend of mine. I said, I see Coach Marsh is talking again. And he goes, yeah, he's got a podcast. And I said, what's it like? And he didn't have any complimentary things to say about that podcast.
Well, I mean, even if it was great, I think Leeds supporters have made up their mind.
But he had one line that he remembered, that Brendan Aaronson, according to Marsh, needs to be more of a son of a It's like he's leaning into this stuff. Like, so I'm sat here in, and I'm not sure if Marsh is a good coach or not yet, for all his experience. And I watched him closely at the Red Bulls. He did a good job in Salzburg. Leipzig, not so good. Leeds, not great. So he's endlessly fascinating to me as a character in and of himself. Forget his nationality, just as a person. So Simon Jordan's podcast, Upfront podcast. So there you go.
Wow, there you go. What a show we have coming up for you. Like JJ said, we'll do some Carabao Cup. There was the Madrid derby today in the Spanish Super Cup. It was an incredible game. We'll talk about that. Of course, a German soccer legend, Franz Beckenbauer, passes away at the age of 78. We'll reflect on that a little bit. Before we get into everything, wanted to remind everyone, and I hope I have your clearance to do so, JJ, but we're 10 days in to January. Is the store up and running?
The store, because I didn't mention it on the last podcast, and it made no sense to not mention it. The store, whenever you're hearing this, so it'll be what, Thursday morning, Thursday the 11th, the store will be open. It will be open unto you, caughtoffsidepod.com. And you can go and buy your merch there, and we will be adding to the merch.
Amazing.
On the website in hopefully the coming week.
Oh my God.
So the t-shirts that were there before Christmas are now there, and then we'll be adding to it. And hopefully our international customers will have no problem ordering, although hopefully the shipping is not too off-putting.
Adding what?
I told you we're going to have a caught offside beanie.
Okay. All right.
I cannot have Americans who listen to our podcast walking around with frozen ears. I can't have it.
I agree.
I want them listening to the podcast and their ears tucked in with a caught offside beanie. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I love that. I'll absolutely be purchasing one myself. Amazing. CaughtOffsidePod.com. It's so simple. So go there. Like we said, even if you have a shirt already, there's a lot of colors to choose from.
Created with these hands. Mm-hmm. I'm holding my hands up.
He made them. He knitted them. He has the machinery. He did
my vision for this pod right there.
Let's get into it. There's a lot to talk about.
My vision.
there's a lot to discuss.
It's a beanie. It's not like as if I'm what's your man that invented the iPhone or told other people to invent it.
Yeah, but he had the vision. Let's get into it, JJ. Carabao Cup, first leg, semifinals. Liverpool, Fulham was earlier today from the time that we're recording this now. So we'll talk about that one first. Liverpool coming from behind, going down a goal, and then they fight back with goals in the 68th and 71st minutes to win the first leg 2-1 over a feisty Fulham side that played pretty well, had a few chances to have potentially added to their lead, but couldn't quite take advantage of it. But boy, Bobby Dick or Dover Reed, if he makes a pass to Pereira, who was going down the middle at one point, it seemed like that there was a second there begging to be had for Fulham, but they don't.
Oh, it's the story of the game, Andrew, because that would have been 2-0. Fulham had a good first half, looked very good on the break. Liverpool, it was one of those where lots of the ball, struggling to create chances. And then Virgil van Dijk, I guess an error, was punished by Willian, although I wouldn't think that Kevin Kelleher covered himself in glory either. There was only one place that ball could have gone, and somehow it found its way under him. So the accusations of him being less a goalkeeper and more a hologram have come back up on X. Immediately after the goal went in, I put his name into the search on X. Don't do that to yourself. Just don't.
Fortunately, most people probably don't know how to properly spell his name.
You just say, well, they know how to spell Kelleher. They can figure that one out. It's the first part. can't. Gakpo, Nunez, then introduced, definitely made Liverpool better. Turning point was definitely Bobby Decordova-Reed's chance. Now, look, he could have cut it back to Jimenez. He could have played it far post to someone else who was running in.
Pereira, I mean,
it's
not the easiest pass in the world, but there was a clear path for it to be made where it could have, he could have executed it.
He saw his name in lights and he went for it, and it was a good save from the aforementioned Kelleher. And then Curtis Jones, heavily deflected goal, gets Liverpool on equal terms. And then soon after, great run by Darwin Nunez and Gakpo with a really, really tidy finish.
He's Mr. Carabao.
He is.
He scored in every game of this tournament.
You have
Reggie Jackson as Mr. October, and equally as
I will always
Mr. Carabao.
No, Mr. Carabao was Pep Guardiola. I mean, it was their, before they could win a treble, it was their failsafe. We always have Carabao. There was an interesting kind of matchup. A couple of people tweeted me, is this an audition for Anthony Robinson to come in as cover or come in as a left back for Liverpool? I thought Conor Bradley did excellently. 20-year-old, who's, there's no point saying he's replacing Trent Alexander-Arnold because he's not going to pop up in midfield and start spraying passes. He's in there, he's playing as a fullback. But I thought he gave Robinson plenty to think about, particularly in the second half. And I mean, Robinson was fine, better in the first than he was in the second. But the look on Marco Silva's face after the Decord Overeed chance, that really sums it up. So it's not over. It's definitely not over. And in 11 days' time, it'll be back at the cottage. Should be a good atmosphere there. Only a goal in it. But Fulham could have had two goals tonight, definitely.
Yeah, so it's Liverpool who take the first leg. Meanwhile, in the other semifinal, it's Middlesbrough who stunned Chelsea 1-0 as they take the first leg in their match at the Riverside. I know, JJ, sometimes we talk about stadiums that we kind of like sneakily like. Riverside would be on that list for me.
Really?
I like that venue. And I feel like that there's a night, like, I don't know if it's the lighting. There's like this kind of reddish tint in the stands that I think kind of adds to it a little bit. I like that place. I like the layout of it. I like games that are there, and it's fun that Middlesbrough went for their fans.
Yeah, what an odd selection.
Yeah.
The Riverside.
Hayden Hackney scoring the lone goal in this game. I have to ask. So on that goal, I mean, look, it was a well-worked goal, but you know, I'm watching it.
Yeah.
Moises Caicedo. So what's going on there? Like, look, maybe he wouldn't have caught Hackney. I don't know. But the fact that he seemed to stop trying to in the box, I mean, like, look, I think we can accept when guys aren't playing well, that's one thing. Like, you can accept that form will come and go. But I don't know, like, effort in defending a counterattack in a cup semifinal, like, that can't be something where we're questioning you. A player who cost £115 million. You know, I saw Jimmy Floyd Hasselbeck was talking about it afterwards. He said it's a little bit lucky because it goes through the legs of Colwell, but Caicedo has to keep running with Hackney. He has to stay with him. That is his job. He stops. He's expecting a cross, putting his hands behind his back so it doesn't hit his arms. He's more concerned with that than sticking with his man. He needs to keep on running with his man, and then it's not a goal.
I mean, it's part of
it. Right.
Yeah, I think so too. It's part of a general midfield dysfunction where Enzo Fernandez is kind of, I guess he started fairly brightly and then has fallen off. And Caicedo too. And that's, what, $200 million worth of midfield in there not working out. But for me, that's not even the story, because for Chelsea, Cole Palmer's missed chances.
Which one? Yeah. I mean, I know which one.
Well, I mean, there were the main chances Chelsea had in the game. The first one at 0-0, where I think outside of, he's probably one of the most experienced players on the field, Johnny Howson, who I will admit I had not been thinking about lately at all. He gives the ball away. 35 he is. Mm-hmm. Jesus, he seems to be around forever. He gives away the ball in a terrible position, and then Cole Palmer runs in and drags his shot wide, like, for a guy who's been kind of the bright side of this Chelsea season so far. That wasn't very good. And then he has a chance to equalize when the Borough keeper just fumbles an easy shot by Fernandes. Now, it's popped up in the air, but a guy in form, a guy with confidence, he gets his foot over the top of it. And it's one of those where if he scuffs it, it's likely to go in.
He couldn't get over top. He was just too much underneath it. It's some of the, it's some of the worst goalkeeping you'll see. I don't know how that can happen. How you're going to parry it right back into the center like that.
I think it was Ian Dark on commentary said he was thinking already about throwing the ball out. That can happen. It's like, because it's an easy breadbasket catch and like right into the gut, and he just kind of loves it. Well, he got away with it anyway. And so a great night at the Riverside, your favorite new stadium.
Really like it. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, we talked about this the other day, and we deemed this competition to be a priority for Chelsea when we did our mailbag.
It's a route to Europe.
Right. Like the question that was asked to us, what should their expectations be in the second half? We kind of said, Premier League be damned. Like they're in a semifinal now. This is how they salvage their season, win a trophy. This is, of all, whatever the disastrous nature is of the season so far for Chelsea, this would be the worst blow to it yet, I think. And I'm not saying that it loses Poch's job, but I think it, we read off the odds the other day of which managers are on the hottest seat. He shoots to the top of the list potentially. This would be unthinkable if they can't get past the championship side in a semifinal, especially with the return leg. They're still only down a goal. I would expect Chelsea to still go on and win this, but it's a terrible start that they weren't able to score in the first leg. It certainly doesn't fill them with confidence going into the second leg. And JJ, they're away fans there. They let them have it when the full-time whistle blew.
But think of where they're traveling on a Tuesday night. Jesus Christ, like, it's got to be a four-hour round trip, right? No, it's more than
you tell
that.
Me.
It's,
I don't know.
It's got to be 4 hours up, 4 hours down if you're going on a bus. Easily that from London to Middlesbrough. 8 hours for that schlock. Yeah. Not very good. What was the other thing I was going to say about Chelsea? Not good at all. But you say he's under pressure. There was reports today that he is not under pressure, that the Chelsea board are not pulling the trigger on Poch.
He's only under pressure because it's Chelsea and because they're not playing well and because they just lost the first leg to a championship side. But he shouldn't be under pressure. Like he's when you hire him to be your manager, I think that you're bringing in a lot of random players and it's the youngest team in the Premier League. I think you have to acknowledge that there's a little bit of a project going on here, and he should be. If you believe in your manager, he should be, of course, afforded a full season at least. So he should not be under pressure, but he just is because it's that club and what they've spent.
Yeah, and there's rumors
and
that Boehly et al. Are going to go into the market again this January. So in the coming weeks.
Bleacher Report posted, JJ, and it's one of those stats that you kind of, it's almost hard to believe. Chelsea have lost 31 games since the start of last season. Only Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest have lost more among teams in the Premier League. Bournemouth, Forest, Chelsea, the three losingest teams in the Premier League since the start of last year. That is wild.
Did you see Todd ended up at the Golden Globes?
I did. There's a picture of him laughing that one of our listeners sent to us.
Yeah, at a time.
I didn't watch the Golden Globes, but apparently he was the only one laughing. Yeah. Doesn't sound like Joe Coy was receiving rave reviews for that performance.
He wasn't great, but the standard has been set by Gervais in just like torching people. And if you come in and kind of be, I'm so overwhelmed to be here. Look at all these amazing faces. He had a bit of a dig at Robert De Niro, kind of said something along the lines of his greatest performance, how does he get someone pregnant at 80 or whatever it was. And De Niro did his usual, kind of jovial laughter kind of. And then he had a shot at Taylor Swift, which I thought was actually the best joke he made. He said, we've just come in following the NFL. The difference between the NFL and this show is that you'll see way less shots of Taylor Swift.
Yeah. So that was it, right? That was the only joke that he made about her? Because I saw...
That was it, yeah, no, but like...
What was up with... Her reaction seemed Like, that's not really a harsh joke.
No, it's not harsh.
Not really mean.
Sipping, she sipped her champagne with contempt. And
she glared at him for having said it. It really did not seem like that joke was in any way out of line. Like,
no, but she could have been. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about her. I've heard a little of her music. I've mostly avoided it. And some of it's okay. Like, she did a collaboration with The National, who I still really like, despite this. And I like that song.
I have no problem with her music. I'm just surprised that she reacted to that joke in the way that she did.
Her fans are fundamentalists. They are.
Don't get on the wrong side of them.
Yeah, Swifties are called, I believe.
Well, hey, maybe Joe Coy, maybe we can get him on the cheap now for the Devonlings after this performance. He can bounce back.
Still beyond our budget.
Oh, okay. Let's see. You got anything else on the Carabao games, JJ?
No, it's just you kind of talked a bit about in the rundown, and clearly decided to abandon it. That Gerard Lampard and Rooney, maybe Michael Carrick will be better than all of them. That's a fair point. Already coached Burr to a playoff semi-final last season, losing out to Coventry in the semi-final. Only 4 points off the playoff spot currently in a congested championship table, Andrew. He might be the pick of the bunch. And by the way, there was a golden, I would say he's not golden era, but English golden era adjacent player who tried to manage there before, Jonathan Woodgate, and that went badly. So maybe Carrick is the chosen one.
Well, I know who, I mean, Fergie thinks the world of Carrick, right? Isn't... That was always like his, he always spoke so highly of him as a player, how smart he was. So,
yeah. And he's a classic Instagram player that's fairly recently retired and who people are only bursting to tell you. You don't know how good peak era Carrick was and then spill a ton of stats at you. And you're like, yeah, he was brilliant. And so the next time you're in the pub and people start talking. Yeah.
It's a way to sound smart.
Yeah, but you bust that one out.
Right, yeah. You keep your Messis and Ronaldos. I'll take Carrick.
You have three bottles of Heineken in you. Huh. And then someone is raving about a current midfielder, right? So say someone like is flying in the midfield. I'll tell you, he doesn't hold a candle to PK or Michael Carrick. And all your friends now go, he's got a point there. And then you go into the bathroom and you turn away like a sage.
Yeah, so there's your Carabao. Let's move from that, JJ, to the Spanish Super Cup, when I turned it on, there's still, even though I know this, there's still a brief moment where you know, it's a Madrid derby. It's easy to forget that it's happening in Saudi Arabia. So there's like a...
Is it?
Well, there's a 30-second period where I turn it on. And you know, when you turn on a game, you always... You kind of... You know, you look... You can pretty much tell where it is by the back... Like, by the stands. Like, we know this sport well enough now where if you show me an image from a game, I can pretty much tell you what the venue is. But, yeah. Like, I looked at it, I was like... You know, like Real Madrid, I think we're listed first. So in my head, they were the home team. I was like,
but it doesn't look like the Bernabeu.
I was like, I know the Bernabeu underwent renovation, but that still doesn't look right. And then you see Arabic writing in some of the advertising boards. And you're like, oh, that's right. It's in Saudi Arabia. The atmosphere, I don't mean it as a slight against them. It's just a weird environment. It's a weird atmosphere. And like, you know, I was going to get into it later, but we can talk about it now. Who was it that tweeted? There was a tweet that I saw that was so interesting to me. Phil Kitramelidis tweeted, so surreal watching a stadium full of people wearing Real Madrid shirts whistling Toni Kroos every time he touches the ball because he suggested players were going to Saudi Arabia for money. I mean, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know. So Kroos comes on as a sub. By the way, in the face of this, relentless booing without mercy. Every time he touched the ball, clear as day, he was actually brilliant. He had a great game, and he clearly did not give a damn. If anything, it seemed like he was kind of feeding off of it. He tweeted afterwards, almost thanking he like sarcastically thanked the fans for a great environment. He played really well. I thought coming on as a sub and playing 53 minutes.
Andrew, would you run your mouth like that being in Saudi Arabia?
Well, he ran his mouth like this, and I don't want to say running his mouth. I don't think what he said was that bad, but it stems back. So he posted on Instagram. He had a post a while ago that just said embarrassing, and it was in reference to a young Spanish player, Gabri Vega, who chose
to play. That's right, yeah.
A 21-year-old highly thought of young Spaniard who chose to go play in Saudi Arabia instead of staying in Europe, which is, you know, I think we've come to accept, you know, guys of Ronaldo's age, even Benzema's age. But it's when you see those younger players doing it, Ruben Neves, guys like that, that it kind of, you know, that's the stuff that's eye opening. And so Kroos commented on it, and he basically said that this is, guys are going there, it's a financial decision, it's not a football one, and he was critical of it. He called that decision embarrassing, and the Saudis have not forgotten, and he was booed without mercy the whole game. But it just in general, for such a big game and a Madrid derby, you know, I'm very fortunate. I've actually been to one at the Bernabeu in 2008. I've talked about it before on this pod, but like, atmosphere is everything for that game. I mean, I'll never forget the scenes outside, riot police between the fan bases. Oh my God, it was incredible. And it's, the atmosphere is just weird in a neutral venue like sure, that, it's very strange.
This is like a mini tournament now that they've played, that the Spanish FA negotiated to go there to play for money. La Liga negotiated there to play for money, and the Spanish FA allowed it. This has got nothing to do with football. Like, nothing. There's no reason for this to be here.
Of course not.
This is exhibition stuff. And I'm not, even as fun as this game was, I'm not sure we should bother talking about
it. Well, I'm going to. I watched it. I watched every minute of it. And I'll say, exhibition or not, they both played their A squads. It seemed like everyone wanted it. And it was an extremely fun watch. Now, the second half got a little bit Atletico Madrid-y, where it was, you know, we can get to some of the goals, but the second half, it was 2-2, and Madrid and Atleti kind of shut it down.
Atleti scored three goals and still lost. That'll drive Simeone bonkers.
Absolutely. But they played their style in the second half, and the first half was thrilling. It was, there's a couple goals in particular what we can concentrate on, but four goals in total. And the second half, Atleti did their thing, and it became a bit of a slog. But even in that, there were two late goals to send it to extra time, and then Real Madrid go on and get two more late goals in extra time to go on and win it. But I thought it was a very fun game. Two of the goals in particular were spectacular. Real Madrid second, oh my goodness, first off, you know, as I'm watching this, and I've watched Real Madrid whenever they're on in the Champions League, I will make them, unless I have rooting interests, I kind of make them my appointment television. And I think I've decided, I was watching this game, and they're moving the ball. They move the ball so crisply. Their finish on it, you know, I think it was Fede Valverde who nutmegs a pass, and Ferland Mendy, who's not even a goal scorer, he runs in from the left back position and flicks one past Oblak. It was such a great goal, and it was so well worked. And And I think I've now decided, JJ, that when all things are even, like if every team in the world is playing at the same time, but like remove my own personal rooting interests, I can watch anybody play. I think I've now decided Real Madrid are it for me. I enjoy watching them the most. And I guess that shouldn't be surprising. Look at their lineup. Like there are stars everywhere. Even if they talked a little bit on the broadcast about how they have moved away from some of the Galactico mindset, but there are still stars all over the field. But just the way they play, they're lethal in the counterattack, but they don't need to only play that way. They can score in any number of ways. They're graceful. They're fast. I love watching them play. That's for me, I guess, I guess every era sort of has a team like that. You know, obviously Messi's Barcelona, that tiki-taka style for a long time was mesmerizing. And for me now, I'll take watching Real Madrid over pretty much anyone else.
Interesting. I would counter by saying, on an individual level, Griezmann's goal was the moment of the night for me.
And
scupper two defenders like that, send them the wrong way with a kind of a Cruyff turn. And then to bury the shot like that. He's just class.
He's amazing.
Absolutely class. And
with that, he became Atletico Madrid's all-time leading scorer. He's in two stints with them, he's now up to 174 goals. And that one, you know, like you said, he collects that. And Rudiger, who's a world-class defender, is around him. And Modric, who's not a world-class defender by any stretch, but he's there. And the way Griezmann just takes them both completely out of the picture with sort of like almost, I know Griezmann's a huge basketball fan. It's like a behind the back sort of move that he makes. where he kind of flicks the ball behind him and everything opens up in front of him after that. Still has a lot to do with the finish. Finish was perfect. He's ridiculous. He's ridiculous. And yeah, I, as I'm seeing it and kind of watching this game in particular, I'm sort of thinking like with the Euros coming up this summer between, I want to see an England-France final. I hope that there's a pathway to that to happen. Between the form that Kane and Bellingham are in and the form that Mbappe and Griezmann are in, I just feel like this is the moment where like that game could just be, it could be an all-timer as far as European championship matches go. I hope we get it at some point.
And there's enough desperation between the two teams. France, like, Deschamps needs that second trophy, doesn't he? Like, to cement his status. He does need that.
Cement his status. Like,
yeah, but there's been
he's won it as a player and a manager. And we're going to talk about it when we get to Beckenbauer, but only three guys have done that. So I think the state is he's gotten to two other finals, which does help.
Let me change that. Forget about cementing. He won a World Cup. He's a World Cup winning manager and a World Cup winning player. He'll be raging at how the other two went. And he will want another one real bad. And England need a trophy to end this period for it to have been the success that, well, just to for it to be a success, basically.
Yeah. And this French team, too, for the level that they are, it's a weird thing to say it because winning a World Cup is so hard to do, but it feels like they need more than one. Like, they're too good for this era to come and go. Like, Spain had their era where they got two Euros and a World Cup. That's dominating an era. If we exit this and the only trophy that France have to show for it is one World Cup, that's still great, and their fans will always cherish that. But to be one of the all-time great eras, they need something else. So that could be on their mind as well.
True.
We'll see if we get it. But yeah, then this game, like I said, the second half slowed down a little bit. For the sensational goals that we had, the go-ahead goal for Atletico to put them 3-2 up was kind of just like a weird bad goalkeeping from Kepa. Needs to do more with that. I think it went down as a Rudiger own goal, but
it was. And then Kepa claiming he was somehow impeded by Rudiger.
Yeah.
It wasn't impeded by Morata. It wasn't a foul. It was the correct decision.
Yeah. But then, of course, as they've done so many times before in various Champions League matches, Real Madrid have an answer for it. And they equalize, send it into extra time where they go on first there was an own goal from Atletico Madrid, but the goal that sealed it, what a fun goal from Brahim Diaz. As he, like, I would always expect him to win a foot race with a goalkeeper, but the way he is so determined to blow by All Black to make sure he gets to that ball, it looked like Usain Bolt, the way he got to that and then still was able to finish to seal it. Fun game, 5-3, really enjoyed it. Like I said, the atmosphere was weird, but the football was spectacular. Also, I know we've talked about this before, so anytime I see it, my antenna goes up to it. Rudiger continues to be just like one of the, if I made my team of just like my all obnoxious team, he's probably the captain at center back. They had the slow motion replay, JJ, during the broadcast of him giving Alvaro Morata purple nurple. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? This is what he does, Rudiger. He is just, he's that guy. He's probably on, between these two teams, he's probably on the wrong one. Feels like he's a perfect Atletico Madrid type player with like that kind of housery. He's a great player and he scored for both teams actually in this game. But yeah, he can be a tough one. And so now Barcelona face Osasuna on Thursday, and we'll see the final of this will be on Sunday. And Ancelotti talked about it. He said afterwards that they're drained. They put everything into this, and it went the full distance, 120. That was a tough one. And so, as they're battling it out with Girona to try to win the league, this was, they had to expend a lot of energy in this kind of mid-season mini tournament, with all the other things that they're battling in. I don't know if they needed something like that, but so be it. But really fun game. 5-3, like you said, probably not what you're expecting in an Atletico Madrid game to see 8 goals scored. But that's been a little bit of a new look Atletico this season. We saw it in the Champions League too.
They're feisty.
In La Liga. Yeah. But yeah, Griezmann, God, is he? He's something. He is something. So yeah, we'll see what happens with the Barcelona Osasuna. Maybe we'll have a Clasico in the final on Sunday. Let's see, JJ. Before we go to break here, we did want to mention, like we referenced, that a legend of this sport passed away the other day. Germany's Franz Beckenbauer dies at the age of 78, surrounded by his family. Pretty fascinating legacy that he leaves behind. I know Bayern Munich, he made over 500 appearances for Bayern Munich. They released a statement, you know, we all know Bayern as what they are now. They released a statement saying that they would not be what they are today without what Franz Beckenbauer contributed to that club. He's a legend, a legendary figure on the field as a coach and even in other ways, but a complicated legacy as well.
Yeah, 5 Bundesliga titles, 4 German Cups, 3 European Cups, Champions Leagues, 1 Cup Winners' Cup, 3 North American Soccer League titles, 1 European Championship, and 1 World Cup as a player. And then as a manager, World Cup winner, World Cup runner-up, UEFA Cup winner, German champion, French champion, World Cup and Bundesliga runner-up as well. So Gab Marcotti did a piece on him, and he really lays out how he kind of changed the position of center back, how graceful he was on the ball, how he could stride into midfield and take players out, create situations, you know, just a wonderful, wonderful player, and a player who transitioned from midfield to center back, or probably to sweeper, kind of created the libero style. An amazing footballer to watch. Although for me, I wasn't alive at the time. So I'm just upset that he denied the Clockwork Orange Dutch team their World Cup in 74. It's like he always came across as the spoiler in that to me. I probably need to go back and watch old tape and truly appreciate what he was as a footballer. Because by the time I started watching football, he was a manager in 1990. So yeah, just an unbelievable resume. And then there's the complicated part, as Gab lays out. Germany won the bid for 2006 over South Africa in highly controversial circumstances and amid allegations of corruption. He would face more accusations after it emerged that his position as head of the 2006 organizing committee, a volunteer role reportedly, was actually paid by a sponsor to the tune of $6 million. And perhaps more egregiously, he faced serious accusations of corruption in the vote for the 2018 and 2022 World Cups, which were controversially awarded to Russia and Qatar. The FIFA Ethics Committee investigated him for 5 years before being forced to drop the case because the statute of limitations had expired. So, like, Gab kind of says, listen, absolute legend, but he wishes that he had got out of football completely. No ambassadorial roles, none of this before 2000. Just got clean out. Don't be involved in this. But is there anyone clean from that Exco, from that era's FIFA Exco? There just isn't. Not that I know of. I'd have to go back and watch the FIFA doc again, but
yeah,
not that I can recall. It's all kind of very, very murky. And I honestly don't think, if you hear Jurgen Klopp talk about him and about what a great person he was, the warmth, like the time he had for people, and even Gab mentions it as well, he was a really good guy. And we are all fallible, we're all weak. And maybe this is the kind of stuff that, considering the widespread corruption in FIFA, maybe it's not going to tarnish his legacy. It complicates things, yeah. But maybe it doesn't tarnish his legacy. And I rang a friend of mine today who has a personal connection with Franz Beckenbauer from his NASL days, which is, it's a wonderful story. His name's Sean Conahan. And Sean's been embedded in soccer in New York and in Scotland for all his life. But he was in 1982, he was in his third season as a NASL ball boy for the Cosmos. 13 years of age. And it seems to me they had pretty much unfettered access as ball boys in that era. And you think of the players he was seeing, you know, like through that period. just the most amazing footballers, including Pele, coming through the locker rooms at Giant Stadium there. And in 82, there was a UNICEF game, like a rest of the world versus Europe versus the rest of the world, 7th of August, 1982. Football House, 76,000 at Giant Stadium. And Kevin Keegan was part of the Europe side. So Keegan had signed a massive boot deal with Patrick, who wouldn't be the most fashionable bootmaker now, but this was a huge thing. He signed with Patrick, and it was obviously turf at the Giant Stadium at the time, and there's a commotion, and Sean is just in and around the locker room area, and as the players are getting off the bus, like these, and Keegan was Sean's hero. Kevin Keegan was his hero. He's coming off, and Keegan is upset. He can't find his specific Patrick turf shoes. They're lost or stolen. They tear up the bus. They go through all the equipment to try and find it. Cannot find them. And this is the days, and the days are still the same. Trent Alexander-Arnold cannot go out in the field without his Adidas Predators. Cannot. And equally, in such a high-profile game, and it being turf too, Kevin Keegan couldn't go out onto the field without his Patrick turf shoes on. So what are they going to do? And in the midst of all this, this little ginger 13-year-old has a suggestion and makes it to them. He says, why don't you take one of Franz Beckenbauer's Adidas cleats and take the three stripes, take one of the stripes off and take the other two and just attach them to, because the two stripes for Patrick were at the back towards the heel of the boot, and put them there. And
is it that easy to do that to an Adidas shoe?
To take the,
they're not Velcroed on there.
No, you can take them off.
Okay.
If you ever had Copa Mundials, in fact, they're the first thing to start cracking and come off on Copa Mundials is the Adidas stripe. And they're like, it's a silence. And like, that works. And Beckenbauer was asked, and he was like, yeah, absolutely. No problem. This is actually a good idea. So they get them and they tried to tape them first, but how do you tape leather?
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. So they glued them on, and Keegan was able to run out in the field. And many years later, Keegan and Sean bumped into each other, and Sean said, hey, I'm the kid from the locker room at Giant Stadium that day. And Keegan was like, he couldn't believe it. So,
oh, that's
but,
cool.
But Beckenbauer was like, Sean said Beckenbauer specifically would always either ruffle his hair, would always have time to talk to him, because he was a young kid who was interested in soccer. He made time for people. That was a magic. Imagine being a kid and you're the ball boy in Giant Stadium.
Surreal. Have been a surreal experience. And in the New York Times did an obituary piece on Beckenbauer. And in there, they point out that Beckenbauer said that his 3 years in New York were the three best years of his life, he claimed. That he loved the experience so much of being able to have fun playing the sport, but also kind of be able to live a life that was a little bit different than whatever he was going to be able to live in Germany and in Europe. He was kind of able to sort of still be a famous star in New York, but not nearly to the extent that they point out that the cool thing, he could go to a restaurant and not be bothered, but like he was just famous enough where Woody Allen recognized him, and he talked about what a thrill that was for him in the New York Times piece. So yeah,
at the deep time, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I don't know how that aged, but yeah.
No, I get it, and I when I interviewed Pele, it was pretty cool. He had a glint in his eye when he talked about living in New York. And I interviewed him in Hudson Yards. He had quite the time. Studio 54, everything. I just finished on this with Beckenbauer. And this is the kind of, obviously, anyone's passing, particularly, not anyone, but particularly someone of that stature. And it's sad. And it was Miguel Delaney pointed out that now the pillars of modern football, the icons that took it into a new level post World War II. Beckenbauer, Cruyff, Best, Pele are now all gone.
Yeah.
And honestly, growing up in the 90s, these guys were everywhere. Everywhere. And you were still so kind of aware of them and aware of their legacy. And now they're gone.
Yeah. And I know he came even a little bit, I guess, after that, but Maradona sort of is on like the tail end of that class as well.
It's fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Franz Beckenbauer, a soccer legend, a German legend, a legend in many different forms. Like we said, as a player, as a manager here, as almost a soccer ambassador in the United States for his time in the Cosmos, dies at the age of 78. JJ, we'll go ahead. We'll take a break. We'll come back. More Caught Offside still to come.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Oh, back now. Caught Offside late here on a Wednesday evening in a very windy, New York.
It's time for Weather Talk with Andrew Gundling.
Here we go. Yeah. JJ, we haven't done this in a while, but I just recently finished a couple shows, so I figured it was...
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with... I know people, I think every once in a while, like to know what we're watching.
And we'll tell them whether they want to hear or not.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll give you this. I was on this show, I think, fairly early, and I'm proud of that because I think it's now gaining in popularity. But if you are, people maybe are sick of hearing this, but if you're not watching Slow Horses right now on Apple TV, I think you're missing out. It is so enjoyable. The combination of like, it's a spy drama, but there's just enough humor mixed in there that like it adds like another element that you don't always get in those kinds of, you know, like Homeland was so incredibly, it's just an hour of seriousness.
Yeah.
And like this, this has enough humor that it breaks up that seriousness, but it still is as good of a spy show as there is on TV and has been on TV in quite some time. It's so damn good. Oh my God. The third season just finished. It's only 6 episodes in a season. So there's 18 total so far. You can zip through them. It's fantastic. I couldn't give it a higher recommendation. I just love it. And the fourth season is coming up sometime this year. They haven't given the date, but it'll be in 2024. So.
Okay, I'm going to get into that because I saw it was nominated for Golden Globes, and I didn't watch. Okay. So, but I will now watch. I recently finished Fargo, season one. It was like 2014 or 2015, but I didn't pay attention the first time, and it's season one has Billy Bob Thornton, Martin Freeman, and is kind of more connected to the film in some. It has connections to the film, whereas I think each other season after this is kind of more standalone. But I enjoyed it immensely. Billy Bob Thornton is, as a bad guy, just unbelievable, and Martin Freeman as a guy who turns bad guy, fantastic.
Oh, is that a spoiler?
No, no.
You no. sure?
It's definitely not.
Okay.
You become aware of these things early on, Andrew.
Oh, still though.
And anyways, it's
needed to know that.
So I've kind of done a switch, and I'm watching Top Boy, Netflix, about London drug gangs.
Okay.
Pretty amazing. However, Darcy will have to. I mean, they all talk like they're ready to go on Arsenal Fan TV. They're hyped up about Wenger, or they're hyped up about their drug deal. Yeah, man them. Yeah, blood. The whole thing. Arsenal Football Club, blood.
All right, top boy.
I'm three episodes in, and I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
So far, yeah.
Also, I should say, too, you and I, many times over the life of this podcast, have expressed that mutually we have this keen, lifelong interest in everything that transpired in World War II. The lead up to it, the war itself, everything that happened afterwards. We're
absolutely.
It's just one of these moments in history that you and I are, I don't know, we're drawn to it and the history of it, and we are always consuming more and more about it. And I've watched so many, I feel like I've seen so many documentaries on it. I don't know how much more footage and ways of presenting it that there's left for me. Having said that, JJ, I was blown away by Netflix's newest docuseries, World War II from the Front Lines. Blown away by it. I finished it. It's six episodes, I think. I finished it a couple days ago and I couldn't believe it. There was definitely footage in there that I hadn't seen. The way the stories are told from people who were a part of the war in some way, whether they fought, whether they were civilians, if you're like us and it's a subject matter that you are interested in and want to learn more about, I mean, I've seen a lot of these things, and this one for me, it goes near the top of the list. I gotta say,
the footage is phenomenal, utterly phenomenal. It's outstanding. It really is. And like you said, how many more angles are there? Well, there seems to be a lot. Truly, truly great. Also, before we get off what we're watching, you many years ago told me, mm-hmm. just watch Seinfeld. Just watch it.
Oh my God. How many years ago was that?
It's about six or seven. I'm up to the contest episode.
Okay. Season four.
Yeah. I get such a kick out of Costanza. I get a kick out of all of them. Kramer, Jerry just kind of glues it all together. Elaine is just amazing.
It's the perfect show.
I think it's occupying such a great, like it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. The contest is, I can't stop laughing. It's unbelievable. I was going.
So it holds up. I mean, that's a show from the 90s.
It does. Here we are now. I wouldn't say season one does.
And I think everyone agrees on that.
It's trying
to find it. That show didn't know what it was yet, I think.
No, but it just found its groove perfectly.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Isn't it great that they got time? They're like a manager. You know, first job, give them time. Second season, fantastic. No, brilliant. Really enjoying it. And I'm sorry I didn't do it earlier. I was going to ask a puerile, really childish question between us who'd last in the contest, but. Who'd win the contest, bro? I think we know your sticking power is phenomenal.
Interesting choice of words. And then I want to say too, up next for me now, because I think somebody was asking us about this on Netflix, the Captains of the World. I've seen advertised. I've got to dive into it. I think it's following some of the best players from the 2022 World Cup, and so I'm in.
I'll watch that. I just hope it's not heavily edited. I hate that. I can't do that.
Let's see. A few other stories now, JJ, that we want to mention before we get out on this podcast here tonight. A little closer to home, Cade Cowell making a move south of the border, leaving MLS for a move a little over $4 million to Chivas, which is a bit of a surprise given Chivas's longstanding policy of only signing Mexican players. Now, they have eased up on that a bit. To include dual nationals.
Well, he is Mexican.
Well, so that's the thing, though. But that, to me, in some ways, makes it almost a little even edgier. Because yes, he's a dual national. He does have a Mexican passport, which is what basically can allow this to happen. Otherwise, I don't think Chivas would do it. But he chose to play for Mexico's arch rival, the U.S. There will be a level of scrutiny on him, I think, that maybe is unfair to the level of talent that he is. There's probably going to be a microscope on him. I'm sure the fans will be on him if things aren't going well. It's an interesting move. I thought.
We'll see how it goes. It's interesting as well that he chose to go at 20. Feels like, I don't know, why does that feel young to do this? I'm not sure about it. I didn't see it coming. You're right. He is going to be under more pressure because he's a cap-tied American. He's an American.
Yeah.
To them, he'll be an American, despite what he may think himself, like that he's Mexican-American, American-Mexican. Say whatever way you want. He's a U.S. international. So, and he's not even an established U.S. international. Even more pressure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. He's still so raw. I mean, we have spoken about that many times on this show that, like, you can see it there. You can see the talent. It's almost like a poor man's Darwin Nunez sometimes, that, like, if you can just kind of carve this thing and mold this thing into just like a slightly better version of what it is, there's a potentially brilliant player in there. And we'll see if Chivas can bring that out of him, because you get it in flashes with the U.S., with San Jose, but consistency has not always been there for Cade Cowell. We'll see now if this move to Liga MX brings that out in him. Also, JJ, we spoke about this after the MLS Cup final when Denny Bawanga gave his...
Well, hang on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We need to hang on a bit because I'm not sure you saw this, and I've just seen it. I missed it today.
Oh, my God.
We're talking about moves south of the border. Brandon Vasquez officially joining Liga MX side Monterrey.
I had not seen that.
Vasquez move, this is Daily Mail, Jake Fenner. Vasquez move has been made official at a fee of up to $8.5 million to Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Fellow Mexican-American Cade Cowell could also make the move to Liga MX. Well, that happened.
The Vasquez move happened. I'm disappointed in myself.
According to ESPN's Cesar Hernandez, the MLS club agreed to this deal with a sell-on clause. So Vasquez has officially signed a contract until December of 2027 with the club, while Cincinnati will receive a fee of up to $8.5 million. We'd like to thank Brandon for all his contributions to FC Cincinnati, General Manager Chris Albright said in a team release. He was a centerpiece of the team that brought FC Cincinnati its first trophy, and he'll forever be part of the fabric of this club.
Wow, that's
big.
That's a tough blow for MLS and for FC Cincinnati in particular.
43 goals and 15 assists across all competitions in 127 matches.
Wow. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll see what that does for him. Maybe Cincinnati can withstand that with Lucho Acosta as such a dynamic playmaker who can make others better around him. Maybe they think that can continue. They've also just shored up their back line a little bit. They already had the MLS Defender of the Year in Matt Miazga. They went out and just brought in Miles Robinson next to him, one of the other best defenders in MLS. So they've certainly locked things down in the back. I was going to ask you what you made of the Miles Robinson move, because it seemed like there were some people that were a little bit, there's no other way to put this. I love MLS. I think it's a great league, but there were people who were disappointed by it, that would have liked his next move to have been to Europe. And that is not the case. He's staying in MLS, though, at least for the time being. Yeah. So it seems like
it's a lot tougher.
This would have been the time.
Yeah. And if you look at, he would have had to go now.
Yeah.
He may have looked at it, at the landscape, and thought that the offers in Europe wasn't something that appealed to him. Maybe it wasn't a really big club or a club in a big league, and decided to stay where he is. And we've seen Jordi Mihailovic is returning now to Colorado after it just didn't work out for him at AZ Alkmaar. So, grass isn't always greener, and I just imagine that the offer that's being given to him is something that financially makes sense, and there wasn't other good European offers, because I think he would have gone if there was a really good European offer.
Maybe. Don't know. But yeah, so he'll be paired up next to Matt Miazga. Quite a defensive duo there. What I was going to mention before, Denny Bawanga, we saw this coming. In his post-match press conference after MLS Cup final, he started to make comments that made it sound like, he's sending the warning flares out there that he is readying for a move here, for a request for a move. And sure enough, he's now, there's no more secrecy here. He spoke to L'Equipe, the French outlet, and he makes it clear he wants to move to Europe. Tom Bogert posted on Twitter, LAFC star and reigning MLS Golden Boot winner Denny Bouanga tells L'Équipe he wants to leave. Quote, my objective is clear and stated. I would like to come back and play in France or in a European club. So, and Tom closes by saying, a saga is brewing here. I'm sure it is, because I'm guessing, I mean, that's, you know, LAFC, you know, they have some key components that are aging a little bit. Bouanga was kind of the bridge to whatever this next era of LAFC football is going to be, with Carlos Vela kind of entering the latter stages of his career. And that would be just a huge piece for them to lose at this stage. So he's made it clear. Now, I don't know if LAFC have the stomach for that. Like, okay, you can want to go all you want, but we don't need to do anything about that. You're our player. Whether or not they choose to honor it and let him go back home to France and ply his trade there, we'll see. It's a tough spot.
Are they going to get an offer that's suitable for them? But he's right. Like, he's 29 now. Like we've talked about before, if he does want another crack at it, he has to go now.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go, JJ. That's some of what's been going on here closer to home in the US and MLS. January transfer window wide open now. A few things I wanted to mention. We're kind of getting into the dumb agent comment portion of the show here on a couple fronts. So Tottenham and Bayern Munich were once again duking it out for Genoa defender Radu Dragozin. And shockingly, as Bayern came in late with an offer that may have been better than Tottenham's, shockingly, Dragozin chooses Spurs. How about that? Daniel Levy now making two big moves in basically the first week of the window. Not typically what we see from Daniel Levy. He is the ultimate 11th hour man when it comes to transfer dealings. I guess, I don't know if it's him turning over a new leaf as much as it is, like, I see that and, like, this is how you back a manager. You know, like, don't wait. Ange has made it clear what Tottenham needs, and Levy has gone out, and in the first week, he's not messing around. They have holes. Son is gone at the Asian Cup. They need help in that part of the field. They go out, they get Timo Werner. That became official today. And with their injuries in the back line, Romero, Van de Ven, we've seen how it's hurt Spurs. They need help. Bang, they go right out and get Dragozin. It's a hugely important move. But I was stunned by some of the comments made by his agent after the fact. So he said this. I'll read. There are a couple versions. This is the slightly longer one. He said, this morning at 8 a.m., the decision was made. We were determined to go to Tottenham, but the offer came from Bayern, and we were stopped in our tracks. I was on my way to the airport. I said, we have to think carefully and evaluate it. Bayern are one of the biggest clubs in the world. I can't believe we turned down Bayern, but that's the decision. I took it with Radu and his family. I informed Bayern that this was the decision, that they came in at the end, and it was too difficult to change our minds. Maybe in the future we will get there. We are a little overwhelmed. It was ultimately what Radu and his family wanted. I mean, why are you doing this to your player? Like, you're supposed to be helping, like, supporting your client. How are you helping him with comments like that? Maybe one day we will get there. Like, you're saying this before he's ever even played a game for Spurs. You're saying this. I can't believe we turned down Bayern. Like, does he not realize that stuff like this makes Spurs sound like a small club? Support your client, man. What are you doing?
I totally agree with you. I'm kind of fascinated.
He did not. If I had to guess here, I would say the agent was not happy about this. But he said that Radu, that this was basically a loyalty thing, that Tottenham were in on him early.
Yeah.
Iron came in late, and Radu Dragozin did not want to betray that. And so he held firm.
Is this the biggest Romanian signing into the Premier League since, like, Chelsea signed Adrian Mutu? Like, Romanian football, where once it was like, you know, there was Georgi Hagi, Ilie Dumitrescu, who ended up at Spurs, Gica Popescu, who ended up at Spurs, you know, had played at Barcelona. Like, there was quality Romanian footballers to be had, and this feels like the bridging of a massive gap.
I mean there's nothing that jumps to mind.
Nothing I can would, no yeah. Romanian players, no.
Yeah, so it's a potentially big get for Spurs to help. I don't know when all things are when everyone's back, I don't know what his role will be. I mean, Romero and Van de Ven will be the defensive pairing. But boy, they desperately needed this because as we see, injuries do happen in Tottenham after Davinson Sanchez left and looks like Eric Dier. I mean, Tottenham wanted him to have left already. Looks like maybe he's going to Bayern, which I don't fully understand, but so be it. So a big important move, a couple important moves for Tottenham so far early in the window. And then JJ, the other agent story I wanted to mention. So not necessarily by his own doing, we've seen the social media gaffe from Napoli. And now, once again, Victor Osimhen continues to find himself in the news for things that I don't think are necessarily his fault.
I haven't seen this.
So this time it's because of comments made by the agent of teammate Kvaratskhelia Kvaratskhelia, who Fabrizio Romano posted this. Osimhen replies to Kvaratskhelia's agent, who had stated that the Nigerian will head to Saudi Arabia in the summer. And Osimhen was not happy that this got out, that he said this. And so he said, "Dear Mamuku Jageli," who I guess is Kvaratskhelia's agent, "you're a piece of filth and disgrace. I'm embarrassed at your sense of reasoning. Dumb F. Keep my name out of your mouth."
What the hell?
So a couple of things with this. Ultimately, Osimhen is he's right. The agent of another player should not be commenting or mentioning his name publicly from a transfer rumor standpoint. It's not right. And it has potential to kind of unfairly impact the treatment that Osimhen gets from here on out from Napoli fans. Like, they could turn on him if they know he wants to be in Saudi Arabia and just leave for, I mean, like we talked about with Toni Kroos before. Napoli fans will not take kindly after this guy just signed a new deal with the club to the thought that he wants to leave just for more money. It's a financial decision if he goes to Saudi Arabia.
And also to say this, Kvaratskhelia would not accept a similar transfer, not even for $1 billion.
Yeah. No, he's pitted them against one another. And you know, it also kind of puts Osimhen in a box because now if he does leave for Saudi Arabia, it kind of makes him look bad. So I don't know. It's been a weird season for Napoli, and now to have the two faces of the team, I don't know what their feelings are about one another. I have no idea if they're friends, if they speak, I don't know. But they have now, through the actions of this agent, they've been pitted against one another. And that makes for an uncomfortable dressing room, I'm sure.
It's excellent news for recently appointed Walter Mazzarri to have to deal with all this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
This is exactly
seriously.
What I want.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was very, very interesting. So if you watch Stick to Football on YouTube, which is one of Gary Neville's podcasts, it's really good. Roy Keane is involved, Ian Wright, Jamie Carragher, and Jill Scott. They were talking about basically transfers, who should handle transfers. And the constant theme throughout the podcast was how difficult it is to deal with agents in the modern game and how agents sometimes don't even bother going to managers anymore because managers aren't permanent. They'll go to the owners, strike up a relationship with the owners and sell players that way. The owner will then pressure the sporting director or the manager to buy such a player. Jill Scott, she said, I have no interest in working with, like she said, I just want a coach. I wouldn't want to have to deal with any of that. And I kind of understand that position.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then a couple other ones quickly wanted to mention. I know you spoke about Jordan Henderson the other day, how it seems like his time in Saudi Arabia, he may have had it already. And it sounds like now Ajax are potentially interested. We were wondering what English club would be interested. I haven't seen a name tied to that, but Ajax are the one club whose name I've actually seen mentioned that may be keen on bringing him in. Not sure I would have guessed that.
I wouldn't have seen that coming, especially considering I just feel like at Eredivisie side, how are they gonna afford his wages? How's any of this going to work? And I can see why Henderson would want to take the first fairly attractive offer and get out, but Al Ittihad do not have to sell him. They do not have to let him go either on loan or permanently or any of that. They hold all the cards. It's up to them to let him leave. He's painted himself into such a difficult position. And so unnecessarily. When you think about it now, it's truly mind-boggling, the decision he made. Crazy.
Well, he'll be counting his money as he contemplates his options.
He's counting on what he has to give to the Inland Revenue. And to Saudi authorities, the tax bill could be pretty hefty.
And then finally, JJ, it seems that Manchester United's long nightmare is almost coming to a close as Jadon Sancho looks to be headed back to Borussia Dortmund.
One of the truly unbelievably bad signings in the history of the Premier League. A team that had chased this player for so long. His association with United almost started the minute he went to Germany. And then he started playing well. And all the ultimately, it was Solskjaer that brought him in. And then they discovered that Ronaldo was also available. That mess of a transfer window. Like, United could were still kind of relevant there in the title race. You know, Solskjaer had engineered it. It was a false second, but it was a second nonetheless. And that summer's worth of work, what was it, 2021? Sancho and Ronaldo. Disaster. Absolute disaster.
Such a shame for Sancho. I mean, look, he can get his career back on track. But this, in these years, these are like the beginning of his prime. Boy, the way that his career has kind of...
I wonder, can he?
Well, he's gone to the right... I guess he's gone to the right club to do it. He'll feel comfortable there, certainly. It's where we saw the best version of him. They'll open their arms to him. You know what I thought when I saw it is, oh, great. Gio Reyna's really got to go now. I mean, he's just not going to play.
We talked about that. There's no way on the wages that they'll have to pay him that Gio Reyna's getting a kick of a ball.
He's got to go. But I think for Manchester United, it's good to have him out of there because whatever it was doing to that locker room, players who had taken Sancho's side, making things difficult for this manager that was not going to let him back in without the apology. It was just, they didn't need that. There's enough going on at that club. They didn't need some kind of distraction like this. It's good for Sancho to go back to a club where the fans will love him because he was a great player there. He'll have a chance. You know, it's a place where he's thrived before. Probably makes sense for everyone that this would end this way. But for Manchester United, I mean, boy, when they made that signing, wouldn't have expected this. If you told me 2.5 years from now, Jadon Sancho will have made no impact here and it's going to end disastrously for him where he's been in exile from the club for a couple months before his departure. Wow. Wouldn't have signed on to that prediction.
Who's United's last unequivocally good signing?
I mean,
Bruno Fernandes.
So off the top of my head, Bruno Fernandes is what I would say, but I feel like we're forgetting something that has happened since then.
Unequivocally, no question marks. So it's not Varane.
No, it wouldn't be Casemiro. I mean, can't these guys be Casemiro. Have had some moments, but
can't be Eriksen.
No.
Can't be Ronaldo.
No.
Can't be Antony.
No.
Struggling.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
can't be Onana.
No. Although he's done okay in the Premier League, but his Champions League performances, no. Lissandro Martinez.
No.
I don't know. He's been fine. Actually, while I'm thinking of it, happy birthday, Mason Mount. I believe he turned... turns 25 today. It would not
been
be him.
He's been excellent.
Would not be him.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not good. I don't know. I don't have the figure in front of me, but I mean, what do you think? Since Bruno Fernandes, if we're going to say that's their last great, unequivocally great signing, how much money have they spent on signings between then and now? And we can't think of another one.
I mean, we're not even factoring in wages.
That's terrible.
200?
Oh, at least.
I'm being, yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. So yeah, we'll see. But maybe this will be in the best interest of everybody. I think it will. JJ, I don't have much else.
No, I'm absolutely spent. This has been a great podcast.
Well, there you go. Everybody get to caughtoffsidepod.com, get your t-shirts and keep on the lookout. I mean, look, it won't be by surprise. We'll certainly tell you when the beanies, the winter hats, whatever you want to call them, when they become available, you'll know.
And tell people about this podcast as well. You know,
oh yeah, we'll always do that.
Please do that. Stop randomers. Actually, don't do that. Just tell people you know that like football. Give us a listen.
And feel free to keep voting. You can only vote once, but if you have a phone and a computer and your wife's partner's phone, computer, whatever, your parents, keep voting in the Sports Podcast Awards for Best Football Podcast. Give us your vote. Caught Offside. We would love it. It would mean a lot to us. And if you're looking for a way to support the show, that is the easiest way in which you could do it. Cost you nothing except about 45 seconds. JJ, I enjoy this immensely. I always do. We'll be back, of course, with another one early next week, looking back on what should be a fun weekend throughout the world of soccer.
Hey. Can I get the latest of late shouts in?
This is at the buzzer. This is like 93rd
yeah.
minute.
Yeah, this is the bogeyman, I call him, Tom Bogert. Breaking, Philadelphia Union has re-signed best 11 left-back Kai Wagner. So let's just tell the Athletic.
Whoa!
Wagner, 26, was out of contract after contract talk stalled during the season and an exit seemed certain. The two sides returned and agreed to a deal.
Would not have expected that. Certainly with the way it ended, with him being suspended for a racist comment against Bobby Wood in the playoffs. I mean, it seemed like this was over. Wow. Didn't think I'd be seeing him again in a Union kit.
Wowzers trousers.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's one of their all-time greatest players, unequivocally, but I had kind of, in my own head, I had sort of moved on and assumed that was over. But I don't know if the offers weren't there and this made the most sense for him as a landing spot to just stay put. My guess is that could very well be it. Especially with why he's been in the news recently for that suspension. Maybe teams looked at him as damaged goods that they just didn't need to take a chance on. I don't know. Wow. Yeah. I mean, like Tom Bogert said there, everyone kind of expected this to have been over. That's interesting.
That's me getting in there, Andrew, at the buzzer.
Right at the buzzer. Hey, wow. Good stuff. Hey, JJ, to you, I say.
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.